You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, everybody. We are back. Part two of our UFC 272 post-fight coverage. It's the live post-fight show here on MMAfighting.com, and we got the whole crew here to react to Colby Covington defeating Jorge Masvidal and all the other big storylines that happened on another Saturday night in Las Vegas, Nevada. We got the whole crew here. We got Shaheen Al-Shadi. We got AK Lee. And on site, we got Jose Youngs, the man, the myth, the legend, doing a tremendous job. And that's where we're going to begin, because we only have Jose for a few minutes. The man's been out just hustling his butt off all week long. So, Jose, let's begin with you. Colby Covington goes out there, defeats Jorge Masvidal. This fight was not very close at all. Masvidal had his moments, but for the most part, this was the Colby Covington show. This is a fight a lot of people expected. A lot of this is why the betting line was so high. Your thoughts on Covington's performance, and did anything surprise you in the fight? Is this the fight you kind of expected to happen?
Well, if you remember the preview show, I actually picked Jorge Masvidal to play devil's advocate, and I kind of talked myself into him winning. Like I said, I was very hyper-specific with my prediction. I thought Jorge was going to be losing the fight until he just kind of hurts Colby with something, either with a body shot or one of his patented running hooks or whatever, and then he was going to swarm him and finish him. And for a split second, I thought that was going to happen in the fourth round. So I guess I'm not surprised at how well Colby did. I'm very surprised that Jorge's cardio kind of failed him, because he's also said, my cardio is on point too. I run triathlons too. I can do this all day, this and that. So I'm not surprised that Colby won. Realistically, I think I said on the preview show, if I was a smart man, I would pick Colby. I am very surprised that Jorge's body kind of failed him, because I was on record saying Jorge hurts Colby. His killer instinct is not going to allow Colby Covington to finish that fight. And the second he dropped Colby, I was like, oh man, that's a wrap. He's going to bum rush him and put him to sleep. I don't think he ran at all. He hurt him and then just kind of stared at him blankly until Colby Covington recovered. So I am very shocked that Jorge Masvidal didn't push the pace more when he hurt him, and his body just seemed to fail him by the time the fourth round started.
Yeah, and to sort of build upon that with you, Sean, that was a huge moment in the fight. Masvidal finally landed that big shot, finally got Covington's respect, finally got his attention, dropped him to a knee. It looked like that killer instinct was going to come out, but he couldn't do it. The energy was not with him any longer. But I actually thought Masvidal's response to the press conference was interesting, that he kind of used his brain. He thought Covington was going to shoot right away and he's going to get ready for a knee and land that. But in hindsight, obviously that was a regret, because he had a small window and he just couldn't get it going. So just your thoughts on Covington's performance, and were you surprised that after Masvidal landed that big shot that he didn't pounce, he didn't use that killer instinct that we're so used to seeing from him?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the second question first, because in the moment I was obviously surprised, because you see it play out and it's just like, oh, Jorge, this is the moment. This is the one you've been waiting for this whole time. But in hearing his explanation, and also just, in retrospect, now that we have a little bit of time, makes a lot of sense, right? At that point, it's the fourth round. He's been almost drowning basically under this wrestling for 15 minutes, 17 minutes at this point. He's exhausted. And as he said, he's expecting more wrestling to come. He was almost in his own way at that point. But it's unfortunate for him because that was certainly the moment. And to answer your first question, in regards to the overall performance from Colby, I mean, this was a thorough domination, if we're being honest. From pillar to post, outside of that one shot in the fourth round, this was just Colby Covington's fight the whole way through. And I think when the UFC first booked this fight as a main event, a five-round main event, pretty much everybody with a Twitter account predicted this sort of reality, right? A cardio-heavy, wrestling-heavy decision where Colby's going to probably land punches in bunches, take down Jorge and just really grind him out and make him tired and win a fairly lopsided decision. It's what we've seen from Colby throughout his entire UFC career. Anytime he's fighting somebody not named Kamaru Usman, this is sort of what happens. And it's what, if we're being honest, it's what we've seen from Jorge his whole UFC career, especially at welterweight. It hasn't really been any different. He struggles with high level wrestlers his whole career. And this one kind of, it's one of those weird ones where it played out how a lot of people thought it was going to play out almost to a T. And I almost don't think we've learned anything new from this, from either man, because again, this is the way Colby wins and this is the way Jorge loses. And that's just ultimately how we saw it play out tonight.
There is one person who thought this fight might play a little differently, even going as far as to saying that Masvidal would win this fight by decision. Who was that person? Oh, it was you, my best friend. It was you.
Loud and proud, baby.
It was you.
Loud and proud. Loud and proud.
So by like minute four of round two, like when the broadcast actually came back on your television screen, like what are you thinking?
Thinking about your prediction.
Are you thinking?
I'm in Canada. We didn't lose the broadcast here. We don't have no ESPN Plus problems.
Okay. But anyways, so you got to see the whole round play out. So by like the 4 minute mark of round number two, are you just thinking, boy, my pick is just not good right now. It's not happening.
No, because we sort of discussed it earlier in the show that we thought he would definitely lose the first two rounds. And then I would hope the tie would have, like what happened in the fourth round is what I thought could have happened in the third round where he rocked him and like hurt him and showed some signs of life. But it just happened way too late. As Jose said, he just couldn't pull the trigger after he landed that shot. Colby, just his gas tank is so superior. His offense is fantastic. Maybe I'm overselling it. Offense is fantastic, and it just drained whatever reserves that Masvidal had. So by the time the fourth came around, he landed that big shot. I mean, those arms, you know, there's probably just from dealing with Colby's wrestling and throwing a lot. I mean, Masvidal was throwing a lot of punches, but I mean, a lot of those when he threw, man, some of those wild shots weren't landing. And I think anyone who's even boxed a little bit or done any sort of martial arts knows, like, man, if you throw wild and you throw heavy, you really can't maintain that for a long time. Even if you're a UFC level athlete like Masvidal, he is 37 years old, and again, he's got another guy that he's got to deal with who's digging into those reserves. So yeah, it was really unfortunate to watch. So it actually did almost play out as I was thinking it would. It's just that it happened after the third round, Mike, is when I was like, well, I mean, that's Masvidal by decision out the window, especially since round three probably could have been a 10-8. Then you really need to see that finish, which he almost got in the fourth. But again, credit to Covington. He made sure that Masvidal did not have enough left so that even when he got hurt, he had plenty of time to recover. So, you know, criticize Masvidal, sure. But again, Covington, he took this fight. You know, he owned it.
So Colby outlanded Masvidal 218-90. Throughout the fight. So, I mean, a huge discrepancy in the total strikes, significant strikes, 94-67 for Colby. The big number, control time, 16 minutes and 14 seconds of control time for Colby Covington as opposed to 21 seconds for Masvidal. So this is sort of the fight we expected if it was going to be a Covington victory. Jose, he gets on the microphone, he calls out Dustin Poirier. This is a fight that seeds have been planted for a while. I've interviewed Colby probably like two or three times in the last year, and he's mentioned Poirier and cut a very similar promo throughout those conversations as well. people are kind of hit or miss on this fight. Where are you at? Do you feel like this is a fight that could be a possibility, or do you think we're going in a different direction with Colby?
I have no idea. Dustin seems to want to fight Nate. Nate seems to want to fight Dustin, but at the same time, Nate also wants to fight Connor, but then Rafael Dos Anjos also wants to fight Connor. Colby Covington says he wants to fight Kamaru. Kamaru said he also wants to fight Colby Covington, so I honestly don't know. If it happens, I'm going to say, yeah, that makes sense, and if it doesn't happen, I'm going to say, yeah, that makes sense too. So it seems everyone wants to fight everyone. No one is actually, you know, making the fight official. So sure, why not? That fight can happen. Dustin Poirier doesn't even seem overly interested in it. So one half seems interested, the other half doesn't. That hasn't prevented the UFC from making fights before. So sure, why not?
What do you think, Sean? Like, are you into this idea? Like, I'll give my take on it in a minute. You don't seem all overly thrilled with that idea, but he seems to want it. And when Colby, like, I mean, it might take a while to get there. We got Woodley after like a two year build. We got Masvidal after like a 2 year build. Is this a fight we see like this year, or is this a fight we see in 2020? Is this a fight we never see between Covington and Poirier?
I will be legitimately stunned if we ever see this fight, and particularly next. I think there's no way in hell it actually ends up happening next, strict, if only because Dustin's just not going to do it. I think there's two reasons, right? Probably Dustin has already said this, that there's no chance in hell he's going to give Colby that type of opportunity to make any money off of him and use his name in any capacity that's a money-making endeavor. I totally believe Dustin when he says that. He is a man of principle, and he certainly seems very convinced of this idea that he's like, I'm just not giving you this opportunity, dude. But also, too, I mean, Dustin is a lightweight, and I know he's talked about moving up to welterweight, but I'm sure even in his heart of hearts, he knows, as a lightweight who has historically struggled against wrestlers, moving up to a higher weight division to fight the second best wrestler in the entire division instantly probably is just not a great idea, especially for where he's at in his career. I don't think there's any way that this fight happens next. And to me, it was kind of a waste of a call out, because I think Colby probably knows too that this fight's probably not going to happen. And there was maybe other stuff there for him. Otherwise, it's just the reality for him kind of is just doing the Robert Whittaker at this point, where he's getting pushed back into this division, is just fighting, you know, all these various contenders at 170 at this point. Because the weird like subplot of this whole week, and really of this fight in general, is that Colby doesn't have a win over an active top 15 UFC welterweight, which is not true anymore. Obviously, he beat Jorge Masvidal tonight, but it also kind of speaks to the whole state of this division and how this division has been for the last like 4 years or so, where between these two guys in the cage tonight, Colby and Jorge, we had four of the last five title defenses represented between them both. I mean, this has been basically a cycle between a three-man game of Usman, Jorge, and Colby for the last 3 or 4 years. And that has really done a number to this division, just in terms of everyone else having to recycle and sort of be walking in place and treading water. That's not the case anymore. And Kamaru Usman had nothing to do with this tonight, but it did feel as if tonight was almost I don't know how to compare, but maybe like the penultimate episode to like a long running series, where obviously Usman still has the belt and these two guys are still active, but we're finally reaching this end of this Masvidal Covington Usman chapter in this division. And Usman, for however long, much longer he's going to have the belt. He's 34. He has bad knees. It seems like he's talking retirement more and more lately. Who knows how long it's going to be, but it does feel as if a newer era at 170 is about to happen. And tonight did feel like maybe the final bow on that chapter that has been this cycle we've been going through at 170 over and over and over for the last couple of years.
So you'd have to say, AK, that if Sean's theory is true, and there's obviously a lot of substance to that, Masvidal is out of this equation for the foreseeable future, right? So now what happens? Because one of the big questions was, what happens to the stocks if a guy loses? And we said, if Covington gets bolted, this is really bad for him. And all of us, at least in most ways, thought that a Masvidal loss wasn't a huge deal, because he's a made man, so to speak. But after seeing him 50-44 out there, essentially, some people I saw set 50-43. I actually scored a 50-43 for Covington. Is there really a stock drop? Like, does his stock drop here? Like, it has to drop somewhat, right? Like, right? It has to.
I don't know if it drops, but for him at this point, at 37 years old, neutral is almost as bad as dropping. Like, it's a good thing. There's two other sources I want to talk about here. Dana White after himself was just kind of like, I don't know what to do with this guy. I know we signed him to a big contract earlier this week. We don't think that far ahead, and that's never a good sign. Like and I would hope Dana White's only speaking for himself, and that the people who are actually like, you know, who actually handle like the front office stuff, like the actual signing of these things and negotiations, do have a plan for Jorge Masvidal, because I think that's a very silly thing to say. I like to believe that the other decision makers at the UFC have a bit of a, you know, are a bit more focused on what to do with Mr. Masvidal. But and the other thing was his coach Dan Lambert on the MMA Hour earlier this week saying how Jorge can really do anything. I think he was trying to say, like, it just isn't like a do or die thing for Masvidal as far as his life goes. He has interests outside of MMA. He has his own promotions. You know, he has the Bare Knuckle, and then he has the Icon fighting as well. And then he appeared on AEW, right? So it's interesting because we know he'd re-upped with the UFC. So there has to be some sort of commitment there, but also that he does have options. So I don't know how much of it is going to be in Masvidal's hands as far as what he wants to do next, or if the UFC really can sort of find this, find an appealing him, or even a series of matchups to keep him around, because he's really done everything that you can do now in the UFC outside from winning the undisputed title. And that is a very, very distant feat that he can go for now. That's really not in the question. So are there fun fights for him? Maybe. Are they going to let him do stuff outside the UFC while the rest of the division kind of sorts stuff out? That might be something that happens. But yeah, pretty much he's in neutral, and that's not great outside of the fact that he, thankfully for him, has already signed a new deal.
What do you think about that, Jose? Your thoughts on where Masvidal's stock? I mean, listen, business-wise, bank account-wise, doesn't drop that much. But the way people view him as UFC welterweight contender Jorge Masvidal, does the stock drop after tonight?
100%. 20,000 people booed him when he was doing his post-fight interview. He got cheered when he entered. 25 minutes later, he's getting booed. So I can tell you firsthand, people have already kind of, stock has already dropped in the eyes of the fans in attendance, considering he got the hero's welcome. Colby Covington got booed, but when he entered and when he left, and Jorge had the one that flipped. So yeah, his stock dropped probably in the eyes of fans as a legitimate contender, but there's still fights for him to make money. He's still incredibly popular. So I think at this point, you just don't give him up. Intense wrestler, match him up with these like high level strikers. He also, like Sean has said, like kind of hints at retirement a bit. He goes back to the gym in a few weeks and he's getting beat up by the younger guys. He's probably gonna hang it up soon. I can't imagine he fights 2-3 more years. So I know, depending on if Nate comes or goes, he has always talked about running it back with Nate. That's obviously a fight he can very easily win, and I'm sure the Leon Edwards fight is still there, especially if Leon comes up short against Usman. I think that's a fight that you can sell for both men, especially with them coming off losses, because they both have the bad blood. They were matched up against each other before. But in terms of the fans, stock's very clearly dropped, as I can tell you from tonight. But there's still money to make for Jorge Masvidal, which is the most important thing, considering their prize fight at the end of the day.
It's a great point, and that's why you're here, to give the on-site perspective, Jose. But I know you have a million things going on. You have busted your tuchus for us all week long, and we appreciate that. And I think at this point, I think it's only fair to let you go off and do your own thing, my man. Any final words for the peeps before you call it a wrap for this fight week?
Yeah, the MVP of the fight week in terms of predictions is me. I told you Marina would not have beef at the end of it, and I told you Jorge and Colby were not going to hug in the cage. Someday, y'all will listen to me. That's a wrap.
Thank you, Jose. Much appreciated.
And, humble as always. That's what we love about him.
Yes.
That's what we love about
Unbelievable.
Him.
Unbelievable.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy.
Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
We'll continue on with this conversation. Sean, this was the fight of the night. We got the bonuses. This was the fight of the night. I thought for sure that we were going to get it out of the co-main event, even though it was not a close fight. But when we see guys, when one guy is praised for being so tough and bleeding well, and one guy is just dominant, it's like almost the formula. It's always there that this is the fight of the night. They go ahead and give it to the main event, which on the scorecards is probably a little more lopsided, if we're being honest. So are you surprised that this is the direction they went, that they went Covington-Masvidal as the fight of the night on this card?
I mean, I'm a bit surprised because it's just the wrong decision, right? Like, this wasn't the best fight of the night. I would say it's probably not the second best fight of the night. Maybe it's not the third best fight of the night. Like, I would, Holland Oliveira was a better fight for however long it lasted. Marina Rodriguez and Yan Xiaonan was spectacular. And you're right, the co-main event is usually the type of fight that would win fight of the night. But I do want to revisit quickly the Masvidal question and sort of where he goes next, because I think this is a fascinating question that's just going to linger a bit in the ether as we move forward in this space just over the next few months and over the summer, because Masvidal, I still believe, comes out of this just as a star. And we mentioned this earlier in the week, where it's just, once you become a star, like, it's really, really hard in MMA to reach that stardom level. But once you get there, it kind of stays with you for a really long time, through losses and through whatever. Like, you have to really do a lot to lose that level of stardom where people want to watch you and they're tuning in specifically to watch you. Like, I feel like Masvidal comes away with this still having that to a certain degree. Like, the people in the arena weren't happy with the show that they saw, but they'll still tune in the next time Game Bread is headlining, you know, a pay-per-view or a fight night or whatever. Like, he's still going to be that guy to a certain degree. Again, a lot of people felt like this was the most likely result. It's comparable to me to like the first Usman fight, where like he comes in there, loses a very lopsided decision, but in a way that we all kind of expected it to happen. This felt very similar to me. And honestly, like, I know it's not going to happen, but now would be the perfect time for that Conor McGregor mega fight that we all thought was going to happen a year or two ago, because you get a chance to refresh the brand against a big time striker with a big time name. And Conor's not going to come in there trying to wrestle with him. They could promote the hell out of it. They're both going to sell it. It feels to me like now would be the perfect opportunity for that. I just don't think that they're going to do it, because I think there's a good chance Conor just waltzes right into a title shot off two losses. So like, maybe that's just out the window. Maybe that doesn't happen. But honestly, for Masvidal, it might not be a bad idea to just kind of sit back for a second and reassess, because this landscape is ever shifting. It changes every day. You never know who's going to come up. You never know what kind of big names are going to be available or what opportunities are going to be available at any given moment. Stuff changes so quickly. Like, sitting back and kind of laying low for like 6 months and waiting for the right matchup, honestly, might not be the worst idea for this guy.
Completely agree with you. Take some time and smell the roses a little bit. I know they're not going to smell all that great after losing to a guy. Yes, I have, and that's okay. I'm here with my friends and just talking to my friends at the bar.
Do you guys think there's a chance, talking about waiting for the right matchup, that Masvidal doesn't fight again for the rest of the year?
I do. I think you don't think he'll fight, you think there's a chance he won't fight again this year?
A chance, certainly. I mean, I don't think if it was odds makers, I would say maybe like a 30-40% chance of that. But I think there's definitely a chance that that happens, like a timeline where that happens, where again, he's just kind of sitting back and waiting for the right fight. Because if I'm Jorge Masvidal, I'm not just taking anything. Like you're not throwing me in there with Sean Brady or someone like that. You know, like you're not putting me back into the queue and just throwing me against any rando at welterweight. Like it has to make sense. It has to make dollars and it has to make sense. So I think there's certainly a chance you could sit back and see how it plays out for the rest of the year.
I mean, there's options. There's definitely options. I mean, I like if Gilbert Burns beats Khamzat, like you could do Khamzat and Masvidal and that will draw. You could do Burns and Masvidal and that will make sense. If Usman beats Leon Edwards, if that fight comes to fruition, it looks like by all accounts we're looking at possibly July for that one. If Usman beats Leon Edwards, like the betting odds will probably have him favored to do, then you can do Edwards versus Masvidal. We could finally get some settlement to that beef, the three piece in the soda. Someone gets their comeuppance, and that I think you could sell the crap out of that. So he's got options. You could do the Connor fight too. I mean, there's options. It's just timing, opponent, all that stuff. How are they going to match up? But I agree with Sean, like Masvidal's not going to fight Shavkat Rachmanov next. No. That's just a silly idea.
Or Sean Brady, right? I saw some people saying Sean Brady. I'm like, no.
No, that's not gonna happen.
Why?
That's
Why
not gonna, would you do that? That's not gonna happen. Maybe we get the. You know what? You could maybe do a Wonder Boy rematch. That first fight was kind of close. Like, you could do that. I know Wonder Boy's been talking about maybe getting that rematch. You get two guys, kind of on tough runs. People like both of those guys, so that's an idea as well. But AK and I will give you more official picks tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern on to the next one. So, Mr. AIM, we thought I've talked about this card for 8 hours. I'm going to talk about it for at least another 90 minutes tomorrow morning with AK as well. So get ready for that. So that is the main event. Still some lingering questions that we will certainly get to answer. But let's talk about this co-main event, AK, because Rafael Dos Anjos goes out there, puts a beating on Renato Moicano. And like we talked about earlier, Moicano just showed that grit, his toughness. He's shoving the cut man out of the way at the end of the fight. Don't touch me. I'm ready to go. Just passing all the medical tests, goes out there, loses a lopsided decision. But a lot of people feel like Renato Moicano's stock rose tremendously in this fight. RDA just looked fantastic. So what did you think of RDA's performance and just the grit and toughness of one Renato Moicano tonight?
First, I just want to say, producer Casey, did you notice we got a weirdo pop up in the YouTube comments? Someone they're saying he drank too much coffee and he's watching the show now.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
The account right now.
Yeah. Can you just ban them to be safe? Yeah, I think I don't. Just the name just rubs me the wrong way.
I'm asking to do some push-ups right now.
Yeah, if you guys do some push-ups. Yeah, listen, the co-main event. So at some point, Mike, I had to tweet my classic, hello, Ariel. I had to tweet my classic line. MMA is supposed to be fun. Props to Renato Moicano for stepping in there. I think we all thought good for him. Some people said it was a no, like there wasn't a lot to gain. I think there was a lot to gain. I think Dos Anjos would have been by far the biggest name he's ever beaten if he were able to pull it off. But just like stylistically, RDA is such a good matchup for him. Again, as far as grappling striking goes, we saw that one, like that Moicano burst we expected in the first, like, what, 2 minutes of the fight? We saw it. And I'm sure there were some people who thought, oh, well, here we go. This is him showing, you know, youth over the young man taking control of the fight. It looked like he was going to get a choke for like maybe a second. And then we remembered RDA is friggin' RDA, one of the best grapplers of the sport, most well-rounded fighters. Turned it around, and for the rest of the fight, all the grappling was in RDA's favor. So there was a lot. I feel like there was a lot for Moicano to gain, and after seeing how it unfolded, I realized now there actually was a lot for Moicano to lose. I would have originally said it was a low risk, high reward fight. Now we see the risk. When you see a guy take a beating like that, you see the risk. This is MMA. That's the kind of fight, and it went for two more rounds than it should have gone. You know. That's the kind of fight that takes years off a guy's life, that not just physically, but I mean, their confidence to be so dominated like that in such a high profile fight, recovering from that mentally. I'm not a fighter. I have no capacity for like what kind of toll that takes on you. But I mean, it looked brutal as it was happening. Credit to him. A lot of people, I think, thought he won the fifth round. So he certainly battled back, but I guarantee you it was 90% on instinct and what a talented guy he is. It just shouldn't have happened. You could have thrown in the towel after the third round. I would like to think nobody would have complained. Sure, you would have had people booing the arena, but you would have done your fighter a big, big, big favor. So that co-main was tough to watch at times. As much as I love watching RDA do his thing and seeing the heart of Moicano, for me, hey, I know I'm a big softy. I'm not hard like Air Helwani doing push-ups in the middle of the night. It's 3 a.m. on the East Coast, and this man's putting in work. But it was tough to watch for me. I didn't love it. I understand why it didn't win the fight of the night, though. That would have been a nice bonus for Moicano, who I would like to think they gave a bonus anyway. But let's not do that again, UFC. If it is kind of, I'm glad they saved a fight. Let's make it three rounds next time. Moicano's corner. Let's monitor his health a little bit closer. Good for RDA. Great win. Reminded people that he's still on another level than like 90% of the fighters in the world. But man, not an enjoyable fight overall.
Yeah. In hindsight, the five rounds was a terrible idea with the replacements. It just was an awful idea. And this is kind of the reason that I didn't like the idea of Terrence McKinney or somebody like that being put into the slot, because if Terrence McKinney goes in there, not saying he can't go out there and just blast Dos Anjos, and what a huge moment that would be. But if a similar performance happened and he took a kind of beating like that for 25 minutes, like, that can stunt your evolution in the sport real quick. And some fighters just can't come back from that. So I actually like McKinney's new fight against Drew Dober next week. I think that's a great opportunity. It's a better stylistic fight for him, and I like it a lot. So Sean, what are your thoughts on the corner? Because I have to say, and we crap on the referees and the some of the officials and people in this sport, like outside of the cage, like the judges, but I got to say, Mark Goddard, A++ for the way he handled that entire situation. The doctor, I thought, was very fair, and Mark Goddard was trying to be very, very firm, but trying to still give Renato Moicano some sort of a chance. I thought he did a tremendous job, but at that point, it was kind of on his corner, on his team, to be like, Renato, like, you're a tough dude. I respect you, but live to fight another day, bro. What did you think? Were you hoping to see the towel thrown? Do you understand why people are suggesting that? Why the broadcast is making such a big deal out of that? Or is it a little bit overblown?
Well, first of all, it's not overblown at all. And I want to start by first just giving major credit to Rafael dos Anjos, because I believe major credit is due to him, because this is a man who handled a really tough week like an absolute professional, like the professional he's always been, if we're being honest. I mean, 16 months was just way, way, way too long to just not have this guy in our life. It was good having RDA back. He looked remarkable. He looked so good the whole way through. I know he called for the Jorge Masvidal fight for the BMF belt, and that'll never, ever happen, just because that's not the type of fight Jorge Masvidal is going to go into. But when you look into RDA's resume and the strength of schedule this guy has since like 2013-12 range, like, you're not going to find many veterans, many names that are more deserving of a payday like that, because that dude has been fighting all comers the whole way through, this entire way, and this week was no different. And again, you have to give tons of credit to RDA, the way he handled all of this, and for an absolutely dominant performance. That being said, of course that fight should have been stopped. The fact that it wasn't stopped, I mean, if this was boxing, that fight would have been stopped by someone, whether it was a referee, a doctor, whether it was McConnell's corner, anyone, by the end of that third round. Like, I know people want to award moral victories and say, oh, you know, Renato Moicano, he's so good. He went out on a shield, all that. All that is fake, man. Like, that's not real. That's not going out on your shield and all these, like, moral victories that people are awarding him right now. Oh, I have so much respect for Renato Moicano, which certainly I do. That doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things. He didn't get paid anymore to go out on his shield. He didn't, you know, nothing positive happened for him by doing that. He's not going to get paid anymore in his next fight because he went on his shield. All he did was suffer the kind of beating that can take years off of a career for no reason. There was no reason this fight should have been five rounds to begin with. And he lost all the momentum and any sense of momentum he might have had. Like, it was a rough, rough spot for him to be in. And I know he's tough and he wants to gut it out. And I heard Casey earlier talking about the dichotomy that comes with this sport of just, it is half his paycheck, and you don't want to take that away from a guy. If you're the coach or you're the corner man or whoever, you can't take away that opportunity to get the other half of your paycheck. But at a certain point, you just got to call it quits and save and fight and live to fight for the next day, because Renato Moicano, you look at his face at the end of that fight, it was not worth it. And it's not going to be worth it a year from now. It's not going to be worth it 2 years from now. It's definitely not going to be worth it 10 years from now to take the kind of beating that he did tonight, way past the point where there was any actual merit to it. Because I know we can't do one of these things where, like, hey, a guy kind of mounted a late charge in round five, and that's why the fight had to continue. Like, that didn't matter in the grand scheme of things. RDA won, and it definitely looked like RDA took his foot off the gas because he was kind of just trying to let Hanato live to see the end of the fight at that point. Like, the whole thing kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. And again, major credit to both these men because they are incredible. The bravery and courage in that cage tonight just was out of control. But I didn't like seeing it, if I'm being honest, man. I don't like to come onto these shows and be negative in any capacity usually. But, like, that was a really tough thing to watch. And yeah, absolutely, that should have been stopped, whether it was Moicano's corner or the doctor or whoever. Like, somebody needs to look out for this guy, because you can't ask the fighter to look out for themselves, because again, they're getting half their paycheck just taken away if they lose.
Yeah, and Shaheen, I was saying to you, I'd criticize Goddard a little bit. If you're getting to the point where you have to say, you're telling the corner, hey, if you guys don't stop it, I will, probably just stop it. That's probably, if you're having to make that ultimatum, it probably has reached the point where you should stop the fight, because clearly the corner is not going to do it. If anything, they're probably not going to respond well to the ultimatum. Now you've really put it on them. And the last thing they want to do is be put under the microscope and I don't know, but you know, disappoint their fighter or disappoint the crowd. I don't know. I think the crowd might've been influencing them, because they kept, like, they were booing the doctor when the doctor came in to check. And it was just a lot of emotion, you know, and I wish the corner could have just been a little more clear-minded, and even Goddard just a little more clear about saying, I'm just stop this. Where's this going? And as for the doctor, far be it for me to question his credentials. I'm sure he was doing his best, but I tweeted this earlier. If I was examining someone and they looked like Moicano did, I would not clear them to, like, go to their job at the post office, much less go back out for another 5 minutes of getting their ass beaten by a former UFC lightweight champion. So hindsight 2020, I suppose, but I know a lot of us in the moment were howling to stop, like, they should stop the fight, you know?
Yeah, it was weird. And to kind of be fair to Mark Goddard, from what I think he actually said was, if his corner doesn't stop the fight, I'm going to take a look at Hanato when he stands back up, like, and see how he reacts. Because at the end of that fourth round, he stumbled back into the fence and it was looking hairy. And I thought they were going to stop it right then and there. But Goddard wanted to make sure that, you know, when he stood back up, he still had his wits to him, and then had the doctor check him. And then Goddard said, all right, I'm giving you 30 seconds. You better show me something or I'm stopping the fight. And of course, Moicano comes out and lands big shots, and things actually got a little hairy in those final 90 seconds. But yes, I'm kind of with you. I am told, just was texting back with Hanato Moicano's manager, Oren Hodak, out of the hospital, back of the hotel, good to go. All good. So nothing
ready to, ready to fight next week. Ready to fight next week.
Yes. So we'll see him in a five round random co-main event at some random catchweight, and we'll have hopefully not be having the same conversation. So good win for
too
RDA.
Tough.
Good. I thought RDA had a tremendous week. Honestly, I'm with you, Sean. Tremendous week. Handled everything well. He's got that sort of chip on his shoulder that he called Islam Makhachev's bluff. So I'm glad he didn't go out there and call out Islam. I know some people suggested that. I love the fact that he just kind of no-sold the whole thing and went to the BMF idea. He went to Connor at the press conference, and great. You just completely no-sold Islam, which is exactly what you should have done. So well done, and good stuff right there from Hinata Moicano and Rafael dos Anjos. So Bryce Mitchell, Sean Alshadi, this guy is an absolute terror. What a performance against Edson Barboza. Now, if you listen to the preview show, I'm not going to pat myself on the back, but I pretty much predicted this exact result, that Bryce is just going to – it's just going to be a rough night for Edson Barboza. Now, I didn't think Bryce Mitchell was going to go out there and start dropping dudes with strikes, but that is what happened in the first round, and then Bryce just took over and just put a beating on Edson Barboza, 30-26 on my card at worst. I honestly thought the worst scorecard of the entire night was Saldi Amato's 30-27 in this card, because this is not a 30-27, and that's not giving Bryce Mitchell the respect he deserves for the dominant performance that he had tonight. So, Sean, Thug Nasty, is this guy a legit contender to you? Are you sold for sure after this performance against Edson Barboza tonight?
I'm so glad that you just hit on that scorecard. Because I'm going to ignore your question for a second, because the fact that it's 2022 and we still have guys out here who have been doing this basically every weekend for like the last like decade, like Sal D'Amato has been doing this. Like, this is all Sal does seemingly. He's there at every fight. I don't know what it takes to get a 10-8, but like apparently for some of these guys, you still need to see a near death to get a 10-8 scorecard. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. Judging remains one of the most frustrating things in this sport. It's just how Sal, you have been doing this for so long, man. How is that not? How is there no 10-8s there? It's utterly ridiculous. But anyway, yes, Bryce Mitchell, man, we miss this guy a lot. Like, just how I said, you know, 16 months is too long to wait to see RDA. Like, Bryce Mitchell just sauntered in here after like a 17-month layoff and slapped down like a 30-25 on Edson Barboza. Like, however you want to frame that. That is incredibly impressive. This dude was basically the forgotten man at 145. There are two forgotten men at 145, him and Arnold Allen. And he in particular has been forgotten just because we haven't seen him in the pandemic era. He's been completely gone this whole time while we've been doing shows every month. So just to see him back and have that cook him to the bone type of grappling that this man brings, it was impressive, man. Very few people do that to Edson Barboza. The people that do that to Edson usually end up pretty damn good and in pretty good spots in their career. So I'm really excited for this one. I mean, Bryce Mitchell, he's a fun personality. He's got a lot to say. And he's 6-0 now in the UFC. He's totally undefeated in the UFC. And when you beat someone like Edson like that, I think it's high time to start matching you up against the elite of the division, because I think very highly of Edson Barboza. And at this point, I really want to see just how real of a talent we have with Bryce Mitchell here, because to me, you look at 145, a lot of good options. You could kind of go two routes, right? You could go middle ground and give him somewhere like a Calvin Kattar, see if the UFC feels like he needs one more to really get thrown into that upper echelon. But if it's me, and I saw some people talking about this on Twitter, like, I just throw him right in the deep end at this point. I give him like someone like a Brian Ortega, see what our old friend Brian is doing up these days, and just see if he's ready. See if Bryce is ready for that type of thing. Because can you imagine the scrambles and the mat exchanges that you would see in that one? I feel like it's sink or swim time for Bryce Mitchell, and that's very exciting to me. Tonight's performance kind of blew me away in a way that, like, I expected Bryce to win, but I didn't think it was going to be this dominant. That was just pillar to post.
I would have given him a performance bonus tonight, AK, if we're being honest. I really would have. I mean, it's rare that a guy who gets a decision win gets a performance bonus, but to do it in that type of situation, as dominant as he did against a guy like Edson Barboza, I would have had no issue with him getting a performance bonus. In fact, I predicted him getting one, and he didn't. So your thoughts on his performance, because it was phenomenal. It really was phenomenal. And it's one of those performances where you actually feel bad for a guy like Edson, because that must have been just an absolute miserable 15 minutes in there with him.
Not just miserable, but a reality check. You know, there are these fights that they make where they put you against a younger opponent, and it's kind of just a litmus test for them. And once one of those guys like gets past you, and so clearly, you really have to question again how much you have left. Now, stylistically, of course, this is a very difficult matchup for Edson Barboza. I'm sure if you match him up with strike, you know, that you can match him up with strikers. There's a lot of great fights and some wins still to be had. So it's not like I'm not reading Edson Barboza's last rites, but pay-per-view main card again. Barboza's still a top 10 ranked guy, or at least a top 15. I know he was 13th in our rankings. Well, he lost that spot now. You know, I'll tell you, Bryce Mitchell really jumps up. I say Barboza. This was one of my two fights that I picked wrong. I thought I had picked Barboza to win, but in my mind, if Mitchell was going to win, I thought it was going to be a blowout. So it was either going to be a Barboza finish, or if it's the other way and goes to a decision, it would have been the way that it played out. You know, that the grappling is just too much, and this is how a lot of people thought it would be, and they were spot on. You know, a lot of people who picked this fight were spot on.
What a humble brag by AK. I'm sorry to cut in, but what a humble brag. This is one of the two fights of the whole card I picked wrong. Just slipping that in
me,
there.
Let me put it more accurately. I picked 11 out of 13. Well, if no one else is going to give me credit, then I suppose I should. I picked 11 out of 13 fights correct. Dominated the MMA fighting picks, should be said. Dominated.
Dominated.
Thank you. Please, thank you. Dominated.
Say dominated.
Mike, a distant second. A distant second. Just barely hanging in there. A distant second. I got, he got 10. 10. Yeah, I mean, 10. Really, anybody can
and
be
I got 10, robbed. 11. And I got 11. I kind of got robbed of a decision, too.
Oh, well, let's not blame the judges now. Listen, picks are picks. All right, picks are picks. But But yeah, I mean, look, Bryce Mitchell's grappling is just another on another level. Like they said, he's not a single takedown guy. He's not a and he kind of hurt Edson on the feet too. First, it was almost looked like we were going to get a club and sub, which is another possibility that some people have thrown out there. So really, just a sterling performance by the guy. He cut a very good promo after. You're going to get a lot of points with people when you announce that you're giving up half your salary, which I think he said would have been $45,000. Dana White said later in the evening that he told Bryce not to do that. He's going to handle the payment to the charity for him. But Bryce insisted that he's still going to give some to this charity. So overall, just really one of the best. He's come back from a pretty long layoff and could not have come back in a better way, beating a veteran, beating a ranked guy, clearly placing himself not quite in the top 10, but right near it. And as Shaheen says, poised to get himself a big name for his next fight and a big current name, not necessarily a veteran that's on their way down, where Barbosa kind of is. Like I said, he's kind of out of the rankings now, maybe a top 10 guy in one of the toughest divisions in the UFC. So I do have a poll, guys. I like polls. You guys might have been right. I do enjoy polls. I'm a fan. I've been known to take a late night poll every now and then. And so I asked who was the biggest star? Star of UFC 272. Colby Covington is number one right now at 56%, but Bryce Mitchell right there, 30%. So he's right behind. Very, very close. Colby Covington, I mean, would be the obvious answer as a main eventer. So for Mitchell to even register in that question, I think that's a big deal.
Also, yeah. let me add very quickly. Bryce Mitchell, credit to him for circumventing the Nevada Athletic Commission and all the, you know, the nefarious things going on there with hiding the salaries from us. Just coming out and telling us like, hey, I'm getting 45 and 45. That's the first salary we've gotten from Nevada in like a year plus. So, hey, Bryce Mitchell, more of that. Like, let's keep that coming. Let's keep some transparency in this game so everybody wins.
Wait, Shaheen, you're not enjoying fighters saying like, oh, I'm now in the top five. I'm now in the top three. Well, highest paid UFC fighters and not providing any number or estimate. You're not enjoying that? You're not loving that part?
You mean them saying it while their manager is actively saying like, hey, it'd be really helpful for everybody in the sport if you guys would actually say the number. No, yeah, I'm not enjoying that.
Yeah, I have a feeling Bryce is not going to be making 45 and 45 his next fight. I know he just signed a new deal, but I have a feeling he's going right back to the negotiation table and getting some more money for his next fight. I think that's an absolute no-brainer. Nobody's stock on this entire card rose more than Bryce Mitchell. And if you watch the post-fight press conference, especially on the East Coast, you got a little Sunday sermon from Reverend Bryce. And I thought that was some good stuff. So great win for him. Kevin Holland, impressive stuff. That was a fun fight.
I'm sorry, Stephen K is just out here cracking me up at 2 a.m. I can't hold this in anymore.
that was an excellent call. Yes, Kevin Holland, great win. Sergey Spivak, I don't know if Greg Hardy is long for UFC octagons any longer after that performance. That was the last fight on his deal, and I think this is finally the chance the UFC has for a clean break, and we'll see what happens. I'd be shocked if we see him fight in the UFC again, but it is the UFC and stranger things have happened.
I mean, real quick, let me throw it out there. Over under 1.5 months before Greg Hardy says that Sergey Spivak is scared of him and fought scared and wouldn't accept a rematch. How, what are we thinking? Over under?
Under.
Oh, God, dude. By Tuesday,
I'm going to have an
Instagram post about it.
Yeah, let me check IG real quick. Hold on.
And then by Wednesday, he's going to call out Deontay Wilder again. So, I mean, just silliness. Just absolutely.
Hardy was protesting the stoppage. And frankly, I was too, if we're being honest. I actually did too. I also. I'm sorry. That's mean.
The so-called prince of positivity.
I don't want to see anyone harmed beyond what is necessary in the octagon. Come on.
Oh, man.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
And then I want to give a shout out to Marina Morose as well, because she got herself a performance bonus. A-plus night for her all around. I mean, that was an impressive display of grappling, of control, and then finally getting the stoppage win over Maria Agapova. It looks like the hatchet is sort of buried, but obviously more important things going on than a rivalry between former teammates and allegations and stuff like that. More important things going on in the world with Ukraine and Russia. And Marina Morose wore the flag proudly, got a big win, gave that country a little bit of a boost in just a really tough time. Sean, your reaction to Marina's performance, the post-fight interview, the scrum, everything she did tonight, because it's not all good in Ukraine right now, but they got a little bit of hope, a little bit of positivity, and a little bit of a boost from Marina Morose tonight. Did they not?
No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I know we joke around on these shows and we like to keep it light, but that was incredible. Like, that was genuinely incredible what she was able to pull off tonight, this week. Like, we, on these type of nights where it's the pay-per-views, like, I know we heap superlatives on fighters and athletes, like, just candy, right? Like, we just wax and poetic about, like, bravery and courage and all these, you know, buzzwords, that cliches that maybe mean something, but they don't actually mean anything. But, like, the what Marina Morose just came in and did this week with everything that was on her mind, like, that is a level of strength that just, like, I can't even actually possibly begin to fathom or comprehend. Because, like, what's on her mind right now, and she was talking about it afterwards with reporters about how, you know, she's basically stuck half a world away watching the ruination, the destruction of her homeland, wondering, you know, is my family okay? Is my mom going to be okay? She's talking about how many of her friends have died over this whole, you know, conflict, holding back tears through all of this, and to be able to come out there and really put together a performance that's probably like one of her best all-around performances in the UFC, coming in off a two-year layoff at that, like everything that combined and coalesced to make this week for her, like that is next level toughness, next level strength, next level courage, bravery, like whatever you want to throw in there, like that is it, man. That, like, that was the single most impressive thing that we saw tonight, if we're just being honest and putting everything out there. Like that was the smartest thing that Henry Cejudo's ever said, when I think he tweeted something like, there won't be a more impressive performance at UFC 272. Like, that was it, man. Like, here's hoping Marina Morose's family, it makes it out okay, like everything ends up fine for all of her loved ones. But my god, man, like that was utterly incredible. And sometimes, like, fights are just bigger than fights. Makes sense. Like, some fights could feel like they're a random fist fight, and some of them feel like much bigger than that. And that actually tonight actually felt like this was a much bigger one. And I appreciated Joe Rogan just giving her the mic afterwards and letting her say whatever she was going to say, because that really was her moment. And I thought she did amazing considering the circumstances, man.
AK, this is a woman who's been through a lot, and not just what's going on right now and things that she basically has to get second and third hand from all these miles away, because the reason she hasn't fought in 2 years is not because of injuries and not because of things like that. It's because she was there and she couldn't get the paperwork to get over to the US because of COVID and travel restrictions and visa stuff. Like, it took her a long time to even be able to get back to the United States. And she finally gets back to the United States. She's getting ready to finally get back in the octagon. And then fight week, this is what's happening. This is what's on her mind. This is the stuff she's dealing with, which, by the way, she's fighting a very dangerous and destructive striker in Maria Agapova, someone who she's quite familiar with because they've trained together for a long time at ATT. So there's so much emotion built, that all the things that were said between these two women going into this fight. And now to deal with all this, the last 2 years, all of that, how impressive was Marina Morose tonight, all things considered, because this is just unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, what an incredible story. I think people also kind of just forgotten how good Marina Morose was. So I like that she got out to such a quick start in the fight. And I was like, man, this is making a statement in so many ways. And it's good for her, too. You know, I bet once she got in there, I want to believe that she was able to, you know, a lot of athletes say this, that they're happy to compete. It lets them, you know, put aside their problems and their concerns and everything that's on their mind. I think that's probably impossible for Marina Moroz, but I do think that in this fight, as long, well, it lasted a little under 9 minutes, so like a little bit over the halfway mark of round two, she was kind of able to escape, let out whatever aggression, whatever, you know, frustration she's feeling inside. Not like in a way like, oh, I'm gonna hurt Maria Agapova because of everything that's happening back home, but just a general release of tension. So it was great to see, and for her to be, I mean, relatively composed after, and to be able to say that speech. I mean, I don't know how she was able to do it. Like, there just must have been a million things racing through her mind. I don't think she planned what she was going to say after. It was just from the heart. And as you mentioned, I know Casey mentioned it during the post-fight press conference, Rogan really did do a great job of just letting her have the mic. I'm glad the UFC didn't try to cut her off. They didn't worry about, you know, because I'm sure they have business interests with Russia. I'm sure there's many thoughts, you know, on their side, like, man, do we just let her go off? And they did, and she handled it well. You know, I don't think she said anything that should be taken as offensive to anyone. She just doesn't want there to be war in her homeland. That's not unreasonable, right? So, but yeah, I got really credit to Joe, because it looked like she was confused for a moment. I think she was like trying to give the mic back to him, and he was kind of like, just do it, just say what you got to say. And it made for a really nice, genuine moment. And whatever's next for her, again, she might want to take a break. She might want to get back in there as soon as possible. But this is a moment that she can be really, really proud of, regardless of what happens with the rest of her career. She should look back on this and as something that was really special.
Yeah, I spoke with her for about 35 minutes before this fight. And I mean, a lot of passion coming from her. She's super serious about this. She's so excited to get back in there and have that moment. And you know, when I asked her about the whole situation, it was like really fresh. Like, we haven't gotten nowhere near to the point we're at right now. So it was like, okay, we're at this early stage where they're kind of Russia's kind of entering the country, but they're not really doing anything. There's nothing destructive going on. And then as she arrives to Vegas, that's when everything really changes. And man, kudos to her. Congratulations on the win, the bonus, and good on her. Well done. Jalen Turner, well done. Great performance from him. Marina Rodriguez, have to imagine, barring something crazy, her next fight will be for the belt. I don't think this is enough to skip Carla. It better not, but she should be waiting in the wings for the winner of that fight. Nick Negumariano, he won, but did he win? I don't know. He gets a win, gets second half of his paycheck, so good on him. Umar Nurmagomedov is the real deal. Dude is super legit. Ooh, Tim Elliott, wow. Gritty fight. Go watch his post-fight scrum. Honest Tim, I'm calling him from now on. You'll see why when you watch the post-fight interview. The scrum on our YouTube page. Ludovic Klein, fun fight with Devontae Smith. Split decision. I don't know what fight this judge is watching. Probably still Sal D'Amato. I don't know how you score that fight for Devontae Smith, but it is what it is. And then Dustin Jacoby, gritty win over Mikhail Oleksaychuk, and apparently he's had a whole litany of injuries heading into that fight too. So, gritty card, some grueling fights, some grueling performances. Now we turn it over to the peeps for a few questions before we get out of here.
Yeah. Memorable card. You mentioned Umar, man. It's like yeah, I totally forgot. Umar should be like one of the most talked about fighters in this card. The way he just like ran through Brian Kelleher, but like so much other stuff happened.
Yeah, can you imagine being a UFC contender at this point and like Khabib comes and goes and like he's hyper dominant and it's just like, oh man, I'm glad I didn't have to like get stuck fighting Khabib. Like, I missed that window. And then all of a sudden you like think the Khabib era is over, and now like there's like seven Nurmagomedovs just invading the sport.
Makhachev, Umar,
all look like monsters.
Hamzat.
Dude, they're like, I might have two Nurmagomedovs ranked in the bantamweight top 15 pretty soon. Like, I already have Saeed my number 15. Like, the Nurmagomedov versus Nurmagomedov title fight that's inevitably going to happen in some division is A, going to be awesome. I can't wait for that. But also B, like, I feel such pity and remorse for the poor graphic designer who has to figure out the kerning on that and like figure out how to actually put the words in a way that will make sense on that poster, because that's happening. Like, it's going to happen at some point. It's whether it's next year, the year after it, at some point we're getting Nurmagomedov versus Nurmagomedov in a title fight, and I can't wait for it.
And guess what? There's no escape. You can't go to Bellator to escape it, because maybe the best Nurmagomedov of all is over there with
Usman. He was in the corner tonight. I saw him in the he was cornering them too.
Oh,
I know.
Oh man. All right.
Those guys and their crazy beards. All right.
Let's get into this thing. Here we go. I mean, do we have to start with Jed? All right. I know. Can you imagine how different RDA's career would have been if he hadn't gotten injured ahead of the planned McGregor bout? I mean, that's just one of those questions. I don't know if we're ready to dive deep into
that. I think about this six times a day. There's not a honestly, it's like if I'm just not doing anything, like, you know, you're having a moment of quiet, like, reflection, and there's a lot of things pass through your mind. And then at some point it's like, God, what if RDA hadn't hurt his foot before the McGregor fight? Like, there's so much changes.
Can I say a hot take on this? I feel like this is a moderately hot take.
Oh my gosh. Be nice.
Outside of RDA being like richer, I don't really know that much changes. Like, if you go back and put yourself in that spot back in the day, like, I would pick RDA to beat Connor on most nights. Mm-hmm. But like back then at that point where Connor was, like, just coming off of Jose, like, there was real aura around that guy. And the way that event was being built up, like, it was a gigantic event, the likes of which RDA had never even come close to being involved with. Like, I really feel like, Eddie Alvarez is a legitimate legend, first ballot Hall of Famer, and the moment was too big for him. Like, if the moment's too big for Eddie, moment's probably going to be too big for RDA too. And I don't know that that fight goes any differently if it's
who was it too big for was Nate Diaz. I think more than Connor, it was Nate Diaz's life that changed.
Yes, it's the dominoes, right? It's the dominoes. Does Nate Diaz become suddenly this mainstream star? Because Connor still becomes
a star somehow.
Connor was already a star.
But becomes, you know, a superstar somehow. It was Nate Diaz that I think that really the path changed.
Yeah,
the Nate Diaz thing, and then if RDA beats him, I do think it does change Connor's trajectory a little bit. He's already a massive star. He's still going to become big, but man, I don't know. It would have affected him. RDA, I think it changes his trajectory as well. Obviously, if he beats McGregor, I mean. It doesn't make him as big as Diaz because he's just not that personality. He's not going to do that. But it does put him on a little bit extra, that extra level of fame. So, man, I think about it all the time. It is funny.
I think it just leads to that division doesn't get stuck for two years, basically. And then Khabib is just champion much, much quicker. And we maybe
we get a few more
Khabib fights because Khabib already had destroyed RDA. Like, he would have just come in again. Won the title, and then, like, we would have just had a few more, like, chances to see him dominate the top guys. Probably would have been more fun. Why can't that timeline have happened?
All right.
Al Content. Wait, he was somebody else, wasn't he?
He used to be Al Mack.
Okay. Wakano didn't get paid enough for the amount of brain damage he took tonight. I mean, we don't really know that, but
we're hoping.
I think he paid enough.
Yeah.
No, hold on. Let's hope he got one short note. He should get a short notice bonus. He should get a bonus for having to fight two more rounds than necessary. Like, I don't even mean after it happened. I mean, like, if you're every fighter who gets signs up for a non-title 5-round fight should get paid more. I mean, we know that's not happening. That is what should be happening. And three, yes, after the fight, there's better be some backstage discretionary bonus headed his way. So there's like three separate kind of bonus, and he probably should have won fight of the night too. Yeah. So there's like literally four like bonuses that should be sent his way. UFC, take care of this man, please, because so much of that was unnecessary.
AK, can I let you in on a secret?
Do it.
None of that's happening.
We don't know that.
I'm just telling you, like, it's probably not going to happen. He definitely is underpaid. He definitely didn't get paid enough for what happened tonight.
I got kind of depressed when I realized that Greg Hardy, outside maybe the main event guys, made the most on the card. And Greg Hardy is not underpaid, by the way.
Yeah.
Greg Hardy is not underpaid. He's actually one of the few fighters probably that's paid properly. Yeah.
I would bet maybe RDA came close to making what Greg's made. But other than you're probably right.
Yeah.
We never mentioned Greg Hardy's pay as one of the reasons why I think he keeps getting put on main cards. Because again, there's people that the matchmakers answer to, and I'm sure there's accountants that go like, they'll kind of go like, hey, we're paying this guy whatever, pretty decent six figures. You can't throw him on the prelims. Like, this is an investment that we have made. So we never bring that up as a reason for why he's always on the main cards.
Yes, we did. We all did.
His pay?
Jed brought it up. Jed brought it up, waxed poetically for like 10 minutes about it.
Well,
I don't think it's the pay.
You said Jed brought it up. That's a faint buzzing already. That explains why I didn't
mention
it.
There's a lot of reasons.
Andrei Arlovski makes a nice chunk of change too, and he's a prelim fighter.
That's true.
The salary doesn't really go into the card placement. that often. But real quick, I think they put him on the main card because they feel like people want to see Greg Hardy. They've always felt like people want to see Greg Hardy. Like, this is not
way
changed.
To go.
Over the last several years, they have consistently been on this thread.
Sergey Spivak. Because, can we talk about Sergey Spivak instead?
I was about to say that, actually.
The guy who won the fight. Sergey Spivak, well done. Great performance. Did exactly what you needed to do. Didn't try to get cute with it because, I mean, certainly if he tried to stand and bang, God knows what could have happened. Took him right down and really ragdolled him. I mean, really had fun just kind of dragging him around, throwing him around. It was kind of hilarious to watch, if we're being honest. So, Sergey, hey, he's got some nice wins. Greg Hardy, he beat Tai Tuivasa. Let's not forget. I know it was a while ago now. Probably a very different Tai Tuivasa.
He beat him, though.
But he beat him pretty clean, submitted him. So, Sergey is right on that cusp. I don't think he's quite in the top 15. But, I mean, he's a talented guy. I mean, he could get up. As Jed always says, this is heavyweight. A couple of wins, Sergey Spivak could be top 10 by the end of the year. So congrats to him, man. Like, hats off to Sergey Spivak.
Actually, that is why that fight was first on the main card, because it wasn't getting out of the first round and someone was getting finished brutally. Either Hardy was going to do the punching, or like I said all week, Spivak gets one takedown, the fight is over.
That still didn't justify
it. I still have a weird issue with this.
It looked like shit.
Yeah, right, we gotta move on because we can't talk.
We're not talking about Greg Hardy, but why did the two most dominant wins on the card didn't get performance bonuses? I kind of understand why Umar didn't get it because he was such a favorite, but why didn't Spivak get it?
Oh, because his opponent was garbage. I mean,
the UFC believes him, yet he's garbage. I just think it's a weird thing.
You always say opponent quality matters. He fought maybe one of the worst fighters in the UFC. So because I'm okay with him not getting a bonus point.
Kevin Holland's performance will be remembered more, not for the finish itself, but for the thumbs up at the end.
Oh,
that meme
great.
Will live on forever, ever and ever. We will be seeing that meme for the rest of our lives on social media.
Yep.
And then Marina Morose, if she did not get a bonus, obviously, we'd be having a much different conversation on this post fight show. So I think for the most part, I didn't have an issue with the bonuses. If you wanted to give Bryce Mitchell the bonus over Kevin Holland, I wouldn't had a problem with that, but Marina Morose damn sure was getting it.
But I just find it so odd. As a fighter, he did exactly it. Went in the fight, took zero damage, won the fight, didn't even break a sweat, and yet I don't walk out for an extra penny. I don't understand the sport.
The move was to not do a fight of the night and just do four performance bonuses.
There you go.
Yeah.
Speaking of, just a lot of love for Moicano.
Sure. It's good.
Yeah. That's great, but you sure it's not going to help him? That's not going to help him.
Yeah, and let's not encourage this, guys. Please, let's not encourage this damn going out on your shield behavior. I know it's great in the moment. Check in with Moicano again in 30 years when he can't remember his fourth grade math lessons, all right, or can't remember like one of his kids' names, all right? Then trust me, it's not as glorious down the road.
Yeah, not as glorious.
So I know it'll be the Prince of Positivity. That's a horrible
thing to
say.
Watch our story on, I forgot his name. I got that Morocco
Spencer
did.
Spencer Fisher.
Watch that. Yeah. Yeah.
He won a lot of bonuses, and yeah, let me tell you, he regrets.
What he needs to do is call Calvin Kattar on the phone and talk to Calvin and his team and be like, "What did you do? How did you do it? We're gonna do the exact same thing." That's how you need to do it, because Calvin took the time, he came back better than ever and put the boots to Giga Chikadze, and that was maybe the best performance of his career. So after taking maybe the most vicious beating we've ever seen in the UFC from Max Holloway. So yeah, not good, but I mean, if we see Moicano fighting in June or July, like, which I don't think will happen, but then we'll have some other questions.
Yeah, because Moicano has all the talent to be a top 10 guy. Absolutely has to be a top 10.
Last thing on Moicano, though, was it a mistake? Not for the fight to go so long, but was it a mistake to take this fight?
No.
If he's going to be out for that long, and we're talking about, like, he ain't going to forget, he ain't remember his fourth grade math lesson or whatever, it was still the right thing to do.
Okay. Yeah, he couldn't have anticipated he would take a beating like this. No one goes into a fight thinking like, "Yeah, I'm going to get just completely like bludgeoned." There's no way he wouldn't have thought it was going to go like this.
Fair enough. For him, it's an opportunity. He's coming in short notice. It's kind of a way to shortcut up the division. Like, he wasn't going to get a big fight like RDA anytime soon. So it's kind of that you take these shots when you can get them. So no, I mean, I'm sure he would do it again if he had the chance.
Sure. Blake A, Jalen Turner was the biggest star, no doubt. To finish someone like Malarkey like that is incredible. Yeah, man. Yes. Sean, he is fun to watch. Jalen Turner is super fun to watch. He looks like a middleweight at the lightweight division. He's just a giant, and he's just smooth. The confidence is there. He's got a little swagger to him, which if you go back and watch like some of his regional fights and then contender series and then right when he breaks in the UFC, you could see the talent was there. You could see the ceiling was really high. And obviously he's tall enough to maybe reach that ceiling, but now you see the ceiling getting a little bit higher and he's starting to feel it, starting to get that swag to him. And you saw it in that Malarkey fight tonight. How good is this guy? Like, is this, are we looking at a player here at 55?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I am on the Jalen Turner bandwagon. A little quick story about Jalen Turner. So my first time ever like experiencing him, meeting him, whatever, was UFC 229, which was the Conor Khabib card. And so I was at Media Day for UFC 229, which used to be the old Media Day setup, where it was just a big room. You had everybody on the card there, and you kind of you had an hour to basically just figure out what you were going to do and talk to whoever you wanted. And all the main players in the room had really long lines, and we had people working the lines for them. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go walk around, talk to some other people, just, you know, see if I can find a cool story. And I come up to Jalen Turner, who's making his UFC debut against Vicente Luque, of all people. Like, Jesus Christ, in retrospect, how rough of a UFC debut is that? And I don't know anything about him, so I just start talking to him. I'm like, oh man, you know, Jalen Turner, like, why do they call you the tarantula, or whatever it is? It's the tarantula, right? Yeah, why do they call you the tarantula? And he tells me this story about how he had 200 tarantulas at that point. But he tells this story about how at one day, like, his he lived at his mom's place at that point, and one of the tarantulas had babies, and while they were out, the babies escaped from the actual tarantula cage or whatever you have for them. And so just all of a sudden there's like hundreds of tarantula babies just running rampant among this poor woman's house, and she somehow did not kick her son out of the house at that point. Like, that is my living nightmare, the idea of that. But I left that conversation just being like, dude, like, this guy is A, interesting, and B, massive for this weight class. Like, he was fighting welterweight then, and he was even big for welterweight. And the fact that he's able to make lightweight consistently, he is so long, he's so rangy, and he's dangerous, dude. Like, these last four fights, he's looking like a problem at 155. And I don't know how long he's going to be able to make this weight, because he's obviously still real young. He's 26. But, like, however long he's able to make this weight, like, I am incredibly interested to see where he's at in like a year or two, because he could be a real contender in this division, it looks like. And he's just dangerous. Like, he is just gonna spark dudes out, submit them, however it takes. He's gonna get people out of there, and I love it. I love his gimmick. He kind of looks like a spider in a weird way because of how rangy he is and the hair and just everything. Like, I am so in on it. I absolutely love where this is going.
Yeah, when he was just coming up, like, a lot of the top fighters were talking about, and this is when I was like just breaking into the business, I was interviewing fighters like on the California regional scene, and they all talked about Jalen Turner being such an integral part of their training camps. And, you know, it was just amazing. Like, I know Michael Bisping's talking about Jalen Turner helping him get ready for the Anderson Silva fight. Yeah. Like, he's that guy, and now he's doing it himself. He's got the skills, everything's catching up, and yeah, this dude's legit. The weight cut worries me a little bit. The discipline, which he kind of admits himself in his post-fight interview, like, he's like, I like to eat food. I like to eat cookies and cake and stuff like that. Like, so the weight cut's tougher. Like, if he kind of gets that Kevin Holland to him where he's just like, all right, I guess I got to be a professional athlete now, I think he's going to be fine. But he's huge, man. He's a massive guy, and he doesn't really want to go to 170 just yet. So he's going to have to keep dealing with these weight cuts, and he's going to have to figure out a way to make him as easy as possible, because he's getting up there.
How old is he?
27? I mean,
he's 26 right now. He's 6'3". Yeah. And so it might just be like a Connor situation where, like, Connor at 145, like, you knew his days were numbered at 145 when he was there. Like, the way he was making the weight, you knew there was an end point to this, and you just need to, like, be able to get as far as you can get before you reach that end point. That kind of might just be where we're at with Jalen, where, like, he has, I'm just throwing it out, but like, he has four more fights before this suddenly can't work anymore or something like that. So for him, it's probably important to be able to make this as far as he can before he reaches that point, because it does feel like his inevitable destiny is going to be at 170. But dude, he's such a big lightweight. Like, he's James Vick size, but it seems like he makes it pretty comfortably right now. So I don't know. I love it.
Again, I always wonder, he's a dangerous man. How guys like him, he went 2-0 in Bellator, had two wins, two finishes, and yet Bellator didn't resign him. Whatever. I'm always kind of All right.
Kevin Holland, too, right? Kevin Holland had some Bellator fights,
I think sometimes they just lose track of guys. Like those guys. You know those guys that they sign just to sort of fill in their, like their under their prelim. I think they just lose track of them. Yeah, I don't think they always, you know, they sign, it's one fight deals, right? They usually sign a one fight deal at a time, and you just forget. Guys fall through the cracks.
All right. Take a few more.
Ash is saying, Bryce Mitchell, I'm sold, and I'm from Australia. What do you guys think is next for him? Ortega. Sean likes the Ortega idea. Ashley, tune in 6 hours and 43 minutes from right now, and AK and I will give you that answer on this very page. Okay?
Ashley might be back, to sleep by the time our show actually starts. It's like a 14-hour time difference, right? well, you know, it'll be a video. You can watch it later. Exactly. It'll be a podcast, that's video. Right.
Sandy Pham, I was waiting for this question to come up. Yan Jianan, Marina Rodriguez fight. A great fight. It was a really good fight.
Maybe the fight of the night.
AK, wouldn't have been shocked. What did you think of it, AK? There's a little bit of arguing on social media. I thought Marina won, I have to say. Mm-hmm. But me and Jed were doing Twitter spaces, so I will admit I wasn't 100% watching it. But from what I saw, it seemed like Marina won the second, won the third, but lost the first. That's how I scored it. What say you? Is that how you scored it as well?
Yeah, I had it for Marina, but the second round was close, and I think the argument for Jan is that she looked like she was landing. She landed a few of the heavier shots. There was moments where she landed like she was doing this throughout the fight, was just landing these really big bombs. I think Rodriguez was giving as good as she was getting. She certainly had the significant strike advantage in the second and third. Not that that's how you should count fights, by the way, but I mean, if you want to talk about a close fight, that is one decider. Like, I don't think the strikes it's split right down the middle.
I had it for Jan. Even though I picked Marina coming into this, but I had it for Jan. But
thank goodness.
Clearly, looking at this, it was close.
Thank goodness for Marina. I mean, what a banana peel that would have been to slip on to lose to a really tough fighter in Yan Xiaonan. A fight that some people, again, a lot of people just said Marina is, you know, ready to be the number one contender. I know she lost to Esparza, but that was a very controversial fight. I know we don't have that many decisions for that. I believe it's mostly Rodriguez scores for that fight. So this was a dangerous fight. Yan Xiaonan, before the getting trucked by Esparza, was 6-0 in the UFC. I mean, she's a really good fighter, and she showed it. She showed it tonight. One thing I tweeted out was like, this to me, I know it's now two straight losses for her, but this to me, if anything, reinforces that she could still be a player at 115 pounds. I don't see two straight losses for her. Esparza, terrible matchup for her. But she went toe-to-toe with Rodriguez again, the number one, number two contender, however you want to look at her. I saw a question earlier in the chat. Why was she so emotional? I think, again, just coming off a loss like that to Esparza, you know, we've been talking about a lot about fighter mindset today. Man, what does that kind of thing do for your confidence? I'm sure she was shook after getting like just totally dominated by Esparza. So to come back and put on a very, very strong, gutsy three-round performance, whether she thought she won the fight or not, she just lets all that emotion out after. It didn't surprise me at all that she was crying. I was like, yeah, man, that must be something to go to war like that and really prove again to yourself that, yeah, damn, you are a contender. You are a top 10, a legitimate top 10 strawweight in the entire world. So it was great to see. But yeah, I love the fight. I actually wish it had gotten the Fight of the Night award. And Rodriguez has got to get a title shot somewhere down the road. And Xiaonan, let's revisit that a year from now. And hopefully we at the very least get Yan happening in a card someday. Yeah. Shout out to Jen Rashu. Let's make that happen.
What'd you think of it, Sean? It was good. I mean, it's as good as it gets. I actually thought Yan Jianan was a very live underdog if you're looking at the card from a betting perspective, because I think she closed it around a plus 225. Mm-hmm. And in a matchup like that, Marina's not going to try to take her down. It's going to be, they're just going to stand there and trade. And Yan Jianan is a very good striker, and people forget that because of the loss to Carla. But this fight delivered in spades. I thought it was great. Two very fun fighters, two very technical strikers, just got after it. What did you think?
No, yeah, I agree. I think it was one of the best fights on the entire card. And I mean, it was good for Marina Rodriguez to be able to get that win, because it did feel like she was kind of in this weird no man's land. And if she would have dropped the ball here right at the precipice of it, like AK said, that would be a really tough beat for her. I had it scored for her 229-28. But I probably want to rewatch that one just in case, because it did seem like there was a split, and there was a couple of close rounds there. But ultimately, I don't think it's the type of win that gets her to leapfrog over Carla in particular, because Carla has that win. But I mean, she has to be right there. Like, I hope that we can get this Rose Namajunas Carla fight on the books soon, so we can get this division moving again, so that Marina doesn't have to sit out like a year just waiting for this title shot. Because that's sort of the unspoken thing right now, is like we're all proclaiming her as this next woman up after the next woman up, but like the first one isn't even booked yet. So hopefully that can get on the books soon, so this division doesn't get really slowed down. I love Rose, but it seems like when she's champion, we don't get that many strawweight title fights. So hopefully this reign is a little bit different than that. But yeah, I thought it was a great fight. One of the best fights on the card. And the fact that it was on the undercard remains incredibly silly to me.
It should have been the first fight on the pay-per-view. I don't care about stupid heavyweights that nobody cares. No one's talking about Sergey Spivak. No one's talking about it.
Shout out Sergey Spivak. With respect. Shout out Sergey.
Not even the UFC cared. This fight should have been up there. All
right. But more people watched Marina Rodriguez win on ESPN than they would have on the pay-per-view.
But it's status. It's the status.
It's the conversation. It's the conversation.
We don't talk about it.
More involved in the conversation if you're on the pay-per-view.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't even talking about Sergey Spivak. So, I mean, it is what it is.
Speak for yourself. I've got a lot to say.
I'm disappointed in the UFC. Disappointed.
I know.
You're not even mad. You're just disappointed.
Is Masvidal in the Legends Fighter League now, where he only fights in fun fights with veterans for the rest of his career?
I don't equate those two things together, because the Legends Fighter League is like the dudes who really should be retired, but they're just fighting each other. So like, that's okay. Like, I'm cool with that. If the old guys want to fight the old guys, the Fun Fights League is a different league entirely. Right. Like that's,
I get what he's saying. Who are top contenders in the Watchroy? He's not fighting the Bradys. He's going to be fighting Robbie Lawlers, the Matt Browns, the Wonder Boys, the Matt Browns.
I think is the right place for him at this point. Like, he's that star. He's that guy who can carry.
The answer is yes, then, for the question.
He's the A side of any like matchup like that, for the most part, unless it's like one of the few guys who's not maybe like a Connor or a Diaz or whoever. But like, yeah, like Jorge could still have a very good career for the next couple of years, just doing these fun fights and again being the A side to somebody else that feels like a fun stylistic matchup. Like, yeah, there's plenty out there for him.
Sure. Yeah. Does Masvidal continue to be a major draw tonight? Yes, he does.
Yeah,
will he be headlining pay-per-views and non-title fights? Probably not.
Probably not.
Will he headline fight nights or be a co-main event on a big card? Absolutely.
Yeah. Will we see him fight Jake Paul soon? 100%.
Yeah, because as long as Masvidal didn't get finished tonight, and like, he was never in danger of even getting finished. He got dominated, but not finished. So I think he's fine.
Take one more. Find the best one.
We'll find one more.
I will say that Colby was doing like a ton of damage to him. Man, Colby was at some point was lighting his ass up at some point on the field. I mean, the wrestling was the basis of it.
Was there any point where you go, oh man, they got to stop this fight soon? When he had him against the fence and was landing a ton of unanswered strikes.
A few of the jokes
felt like they were getting close. Like, a few of them almost felt like they slithered in, but
yeah. Jorge, I thought he was going to crank him on his jaw, but I think he knows what he's doing.
The narrative from Masvidal about this fight, I mean, and I know he'll mention it like a little bit, just kind of being sarcastic, but you cannot say this is a crotch-sniffing performance. Colby.
Not at all.
Colby sunned him tonight. I mean, he sunned him. Just took him down, did whatever he wanted, and I mean, this was not a competitive fight at all. Outside of the one shot that Masvidal landed, I scored a 50-43. I thought Colby got a 10-8 in the third and the fifth. It didn't happen. We got 150-44, but I mean, this is one-way traffic. There's no crotch sniffing. There's none of that. This is a one-sided beating.
It had a Leon Edwards versus Nate Diaz feel. There was one moment. I mean, obviously, the moment came at the very end of the fight.
Just that one part.
But the same moment, there was a moment happened, but he took such a beating to get to that moment that he couldn't follow up that moment. Like, obviously, Masvidal was so beat up from the...
But Nate tried. Nate followed up. It just, yeah.
Nate, Nate did the whole thing. Remember? Watch it again. That was, like, what everyone went crazy for. Like, Nate was like, God, follow up.
But Nate landed more shots after that. Like, he didn't just rock him once and then the bell rang.
It wasn't exactly the same. What I'm saying is, like, that beating, but there was that one moment. That because Masvidal had that one moment... There's still a little bit of light into the tunnel. Like Nate has that one, moment.
Colby did a lot more.
I think you're totally wrong about that.
Colby did a lot more damage to Masvidal than Edwards did to Diaz. I mean, Colby was like you guys. The finish I was thinking of was when he had him against the fence and was just landing unanswered. And you know, Masvidal was moving his head. He was all right, but he was getting.
Oh, he was rope-a-doping.
He slipped quite a few.
Sure, he did, but he was also getting hit. He was, and that wasn't the only time. That was one part. He was getting hit. Like, watch the fight again. People want to talk about that one shot.
I'm not gonna watch the fight again.
Colby cracked him with some clean shots. Like this wasn't just volume. People were asking why did Masvidal kept getting backed up to the fence. I'm like, because when they were throwing and exchanging, like Covington was legitimately hurting him. Yeah. That there's a reason the cage got cut off. It wasn't just bad strategy or whatever, or just pressure. He was hurting him in some of those exchanges. So I got to give Covington credit. I mean, he really was.
I talked about this on the Q&A. Someone asked, who's striking is better, Masvidal or Colby. And I was like, well, it all depends on how worried you are about the wrestling. If you're worried about Colby's wrestling, Colby's striking will be a lot better. Mm-hmm. If Masvidal is worried about the wrestling, Masvidal's striking isn't as dangerous. So Colby uses his wrestling and makes him a much better striker.
He mixed the martial arts. By the way, again, I'm trying to put a stop to, but I mean, people just keep doing it, Casey.
By the way, just to put a stamp on it, for context, significant strikes in the Edwards Diaz fight. Leon landed one more significant strike than Nate did.
Really?
In overall strikes, Nate Diaz almost 50 more strikes total than Leon landed. 130 to 83. Oh,
total.
So. And then 77 to 76, Leon Edwards for significant strikes. So totally different circumstances.
I guess my mind, or when you kind of see people chattering online, I think maybe they've kind of – I felt Leon was much more dominant in that fight than I
remember. He was winning the fight as far as not taking damage, but his his output was not significant. Not obviously nowhere near Colby Covington. Very different style of fighters, but no. Colby had Masvidal in a lot more trouble than Edwards ever did Diaz. Mm-hmm. And again, Edwards clearly won that fight, but he won that fight in the way you win MMA fights. And that's fine. I'm not criticizing that. But Colby really, really did a ton on offense today.
Well, I'm not going to rewatch either of those fights, so I'll take your word for it.
You can hit the music, Casey.
Yeah, I was looking for it. Or is it?
Can we stop mixing the martial arts? What was my hashtag I said earlier? Hashtag keep the martial arts apart. Keep the martial arts apart. It's very easy to chant. We'll get the rhythm down there. This is my new thing, guys. You gotta stop mixing the martial arts. There's too much. Late. Justin Jacoby went for a takedown, and I was like, whoa.
Ooh.
What are we doing? What are we doing? Stop it.
This is what happens if you guys 4:30 in the morning.
Listen, if you guys still want some MMA drama, looks like Conor McGregor is on the Twitter rampage again. Not on the rampage, but he's out there tweeting. And the more tweets he does, probably the more dramatic it will get. So if you're looking for something to do, head on over to Conor's Twitter, because it looks like he's very active on there. So that's it. UFC 272 in the books. AK and I will be back in about 6.5 hours to talk some matchmaking. Sean's got a column coming out tomorrow. It's not over yet, is what we're trying to say.
It's never
over.
Here
we go. So for Sean, for AK, Casey on the ones and twos, and all of you, appreciate you very much. I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody, and good morning to some of you.
Keep the martial arts apart.
Keep the martial arts apart.
Oh, wait.
It's like Donna Martin graduates.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best.
Apply in minutes at mercury.com.